from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello and the Register's Rome correspondent Edward Penton discuss week one at the Synod of the Family. Also, Jeanette and Register writer Joseph Pronishin talk about the new letter from Phoenix Bishop Thomas Olmsted calling Catholic men into spiritual battle. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Edward Penton, is the Register's Vatican correspondent. Edward began reporting on the Pope and the Vatican with Vatican Radio before joining the Register team 10 years ago. For the last year, he has led the Register's coverage of the Bishop's Synod on Marriage and the Family. And today he's with us to discuss the opening week of the Synod, now meeting in Rome.
Edward, it's been a whirlwind week. It's been week one of the Synod, the long-awaited ordinary Synod on the family. Bishops and cardinals are gathered there in Rome, and you've been covering this day by day, giving us at the Register a daily report of what's going on. Yeah. And it seems like it's been 2 weeks, and it's only been 1 week. It's really a lot has happened. So tell us, what are the highlights of this important first week?
Well, I think the highlight at the beginning of the week was Cardinal Peter Erdo, who's the general relator of the Synod. He's responsible for kind of setting the tone for the Synod by giving an introductory speech. And he gave a speech which many welcomed because it seemed to uphold the Church's doctrine in many key issues, especially ones which were sort of sources of confusion at the last Synod. So it also followed a homily and the Pope's speech at the vigil for the Synod, which were also very much underscoring the tradition and doctrine of the Church. From the Holy Father. So that was put together. There was quite a strong sort of sense that this Synod was getting off on the sort of footing that many Catholics were hoping for, that it would kind of bring a certain clarity to it. And then gradually, as the week went on, there was a bit of a pushback to Cardinal's speech, partly because I think some wanted to have a more, as they would say, a more open debate without sort of focusing too much on Scripture and tradition, and so they wanted to have a bit more exploration of the sort of pastoral innovations that have been floated about. So that took center stage sort of in the next few days. But there are other highlights or points to mention too. There were certain questions over the new methodology of the Synod. People weren't so happy about, or weren't so clear about what this methodology meant. It was rather confusing to them. They weren't sure quite what the voting situation was going to be. So there was that too. But overall, now, I think it's been quite positive, really.
That's good. That's really good to hear. I know you yourself have been reporting on the concerns leading up to the Synod. So it was a very promising thing to hear the positive this week. And, you know, here as the week concludes, has some of the confusion over the methodology been cleared up, or are there still questions to be answered?
There's still questions to be answered. Archbishop Kurtz mentioned them to the Register at the beginning of the week. He also mentioned them again today on Friday. There's just a bit of concern about what the voting procedure is. What they're doing this Synod, unusually, they haven't done this before, they're using the Instrumentum Laboris, which is a working document which was put out, which was kind of created by the Synod of Bishops based on questionnaires and input from different dioceses around the world. Mm-hmm. That document is kind of controversial. There's been quite a lot of criticism of it. One thinks it sows doubt in the minds of people. Archbishop Chaput, in his intervention at the Synod, said it is a certain subtle hopelessness about it. Mm. So not everyone's happy about it. And that document has now become the document on which all the discussions are going to be based. So mm-hmm. everything that the Synod Fathers discuss will have to be based on this document. So that's a concern for some people. And the other part of that is that they've got to vote on, usually at Synod, they vote on propositions at the end. So they create these propositions, which they send to the Holy Father, and they vote on them. This time, they're voting on the various paragraphs of this Instrumentum Laboris, and they have to vote to get a two-thirds majority among them if they want to amend these paragraphs. So that's causing a bit of concern too, because as we know, within the Instrumentum Laboris are three paragraphs which were essentially rejected at the last synod, but which the Pope wanted included in this document.
That's right.
One of which is the Cardinal Casper proposal on admitting Catholics to Holy Communion, the ordinary married Catholics to Holy Communion. And that people are concerned about, because that's going to be in there. And if they want to change it, they've got to get a two-thirds majority to change that paragraph. So that's a concern. People think that's a bit of a manipulation, that they're trying to push through this Cardinal Casper proposal in a subtle way. But these are all being kind of worked out. So it's a bit too early to say
if this is the
situation at
the
end
final.
Of the 3 weeks. Okay. But that seems to be the process, yeah.
So that's what's happening now. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Edward Penton from Rome, who has been reporting on the Synod, the first week of the Synod, giving us daily reports at ncregister.com. We're talking about the look back at this week and what are the highlights. And, you know, one of the struggles has been over methodology, which is becoming more clear. Another aspect that developed and became more clear during this week was the small groups. This is a part of many synods, but I think it's taking a greater role in this synod. What is going on with the small groups?
That's right, Jeanette. Yes, and in fact, that's a positive aspect to this synod, is that these small groups have a far greater prominence. The Holy Father said he wanted this to foster a more intense debate on the issues and to get these issues much more threshed out again. And I think they're generally considered very popular. Archbishop Kurtz was saying today that he's preferred this because he said actually the general discussions open to everyone can get rather boring. So having these small discussions where there's only 20 in each group and they get to hear from different cultures all around the world, they find that very stimulating and helpful to sort of form their own perspective on marriage and the family. So that's been a positive sign. And there are 13 groups in all different languages, and they're all producing reports at the end of each week. We got our report today. And there's a huge range of discussions of topics being discussed, which they welcome very much, I think. And those will all be put together for the final report.
And those are put in the hands of reporters, is that correct?
That's right, yes. They're all made public, these summaries of each working group, yeah.
Now, here in the U.S., we have a couple of our prelates who are leading, or they are the moderators of these small groups, is that correct?
That's right, yes. There's Archbishop Chaput and Archbishop Kurtz, I think there are a few Americans who are leading it. Yes, there's a whole mix, and they've been elected to do that. So they're being proposed by the Synod Secretariat. They're elected. Yeah.
So they have the support of the body. Now, another thing that doesn't get a whole lot of attention, I think, is the lay experts who are at the Synod. They are not able to vote, but they are present and they are able to give presentation. So what has happened with regard to these lay people?
Well, we've only heard from two married couples so far. One couple from, I think, Latin America, another from South Africa. And they were really giving testimonies to how their marriages have had struggles, but they've got through them, and they've explained how they got through them through the help of their faith, through Christ, of course, and through bodies which Catholic bodies which have helped them do that, and that's been a very interesting testimony from these people. And I put details of that in my article, which came out yesterday in the Register, where you can read about just how these groups helped them and how useful they were, and how much they recommend them to other couples who may be going through similar problems.
Yes, that was Day 4's report. And, you know, Edward, one of the things that really impressed me about their testimonies was just the promise of Christ, you know, that they really referred back to Christ. And unfortunately, in a lot of these discussions, because they revolve around a methodology, they revolve around a particular doctrine, it isn't always clear, this referral back to Scripture, back to Christ. And so it was really a beautiful witness for these lay people to do precisely that. You know, we have just literally 45 minutes or so, 45 seconds left here, but Edward, I was wondering what the atmosphere outside of the Synod halls is like there in Rome. There are a lot of people in Rome right now. What is the general atmosphere?
It's okay. There's a sort of positive sort of wait-and-see attitude, to see what happens. Some people think, you know, there's got to be absolutely no change, really, at the end of this. It's just a chance to talk about these things. Others are more concerned, and they feel that, especially this Casper proposal, that the things will get rather difficult towards the end when these sort of contentious issues are raised. So there's a bit of concern, a mixture of optimism and concern, I would say.
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, we just covered this whole process in prayer. That's the response of the faithful, and that's what we will do. And Edward, we appreciate your faithful reporting, and we cover you with prayer as well as you seek to report the truth. So thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Jeanette. Thank you.
When we return, have you heard about Bishop Olmsted's letter to Catholic men? It is powerful. We're going to talk about it next. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Joseph Pronishin, is a staff writer with the National Catholic Register. His articles have appeared regularly in a number of national publications, including Columbia Magazine, Faith and Family, Catholic Digest, and Marian Helper. Today he talks with Jeanette about the new document from Phoenix Bishop Thomas Olmsted, calling Catholic men into spiritual battle.
Joe, it's great to have you on Register Radio. I'm so glad you could be with us today. There's a very important topic, and it's a topic you've been looking at for some time, just researching and catching, grabbing, I guess I should say, information about this topic, and that's the topic of apostolates to men, specifically. And recently we were thrown a great bone in this regard, because Bishop Thomas Olmsted of Phoenix, Arizona, published this wonderful letter that seems really almost unprecedented. I'm not aware of any other letter like this. And it's a letter to all Catholic men of his diocese. What did the letter say?
Yes. First of all, Jeanette, I will say that this letter, you're right, it is unprecedented, and it's extremely important, and this should be for men of all dioceses in the United States, men everywhere, because it's extremely important how Bishop Olmsted has put his finger on one of the major problems of our culture today, and something that he calls men to address. Track, but he was drawn to it, I think, by the statistics, which are horrible. He calls them devastating, and not only him, there are some others. Like, for example, there's only about 1/3 of Catholic men really go to Mass on a Sunday, in a given Sunday. He says that since the year 2000, 14 million Catholics have left the faith. 28% of infant baptisms have dropped off. Adult baptisms have dropped off by 31%. Sacramental marriages by 41%. And we could, you know, obviously see this happening in society. And even religious education of children in a parish by 24%. So these things are, devastating. And the only way he sees them being turned around at this point, at least according to his apostolic letter here, which is called Into the Breach, is for men to step into that breach and do something about it. And the letter goes on to explain, you know, the, some of the problems, and also giving directions on how to do that. And if I may, Jeanette, I just throw out that he takes the title, so people realize where the title came from, Into the Breach. He takes that title from Ezekiel chapter 22, verse 30, where he calls, is there no one, he says, who would build a wall and stand in the breach before me to keep me from destroying the land? That's exactly what Moses did to, after the Exodus. He had to stand into the breach to stop the Lord from destroying the Israelites. And why? Because they were totally ignoring him and disobeying his laws. They were just not worshiping correctly. They were in all sorts of immorality and idolatry. And the chapter in Ezekiel, chapter 22, begins that way. It lists all of the major problems, which sound very much like today, that the Israelites were going through. And the Lord said, I'm, you know, about to scatter everybody unless somebody stands in the breach. So what happens?
Bishop, so that's his call. Mm-hmm. That's his call, is for these men to step into the breach. That's a beautiful. I'm glad you explained that, because I didn't even realize where he had taken it from. And of course, anyone can go and read this this exhortation at intothebreach.net. That's Into the Breach, BREACH.net. And it's really worth the read, men or women, obviously. Mm-hmm. I did read it, and we were able to publish part of it on ncregister.com. Bishop Olmsted gave us permission to do that. We thought it was so wonderful. We really wanted to get people to see it. And of course, Joe, you had been working on a story about men's apostolates, and this came in perfect time. So this really was able to lead your story. And that story is called, A Manly Call to Arms. And it's A Phoenix Bishop Urges Men to Spiritual Battle. And it's leading one of the lead pages of our October 18th print edition, but it's also online for people to read it there and to pass it along. And, you know, Joe, as I found it, I'm glad you mentioned the passage in Ezekiel, and you mentioned Moses stepping up and standing in the breach. One of the things I really enjoyed about this letter is that it gave men examples of saintly men who have stood in the breach of this spiritual battle, of the cultural battle, of the darkness, and who have brought light. And he gives many examples. And I thought, for me, I'm not a man, obviously, but that was something that really stood out about this. Was there anything particular that stood out to you?
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, well, that did, because, I mean, as people, it's saints like we could, we know, St. Joseph, John the Baptist, fearless, you know, St. Joseph, fearless in a quiet way, John the Baptist in a very vocal way, Michael the Archangel. And interestingly enough, Bishop Olmsted released this letter on the Feast of the Archangels.
September 29th.
And Thomas Moore, another man who stepped into the breach. Pope John Paul II, St. John Paul. And these are prime examples he gives. But other things struck me also, yes. Some of the ways that he told men to, take up their call over here. And he appealed to them in very manly ways in the sense of spiritual battle. I mean, this is a way not to use violence in a physical battle, but we have to remember that the church has always been called for centuries the church militant here on earth. And St. Paul describes, in one of his epistles, St. Paul describes putting on the battle gear for the battle, the spiritual battle. And he goes through the armor as if you're a Roman soldier putting on the armor. And what you're putting on is the breastplate, the helmet, and so on, of the sword of the Spirit. Is, you know, the,
that's right.
And the Word of God. And these are the things he urges men. And, you know, he reminded me of a general, a fearless general, Bishop Olmsted did, in calling men to battle by being on the front of the line himself. And or like Doctor of the Church Lawrence and Brindisi, who led men into battle, believe it or not, carrying the crucifix. He was at the head of the troops carrying a crucifix, and he led men into battle.
What a great image, Joe.
So this is what you have to do. And he gives us specific ways, too.
Well, let's get into those in just a second. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Register writer Joseph Pronishin, and we're talking about this wonderful letter to Catholic men written by Bishop Olmsted of Phoenix. It's called Into the Breach. And Joe, you mentioned some very specific ways. Give us a few of those ways, and then I want to talk very quickly next about some of the specific men's groups you highlight in your story. We don't have a lot of time. So what are some of these ways,
very simple. Some of the ways that soldiers arm themselves, he says, for battle, we have to do the same, and we do that with daily prayer, morning, evening, pray before meals. When you're with your family, when you're with your children, when you're with other men, pray even in a diner, in a restaurant. Don't be ashamed, he says, that you're given to give thanks to Christ. Make sure you go to Mass. He obviously says Sundays, must go to Mass on Sunday. But also, there's a suggestion that if you can go more than that, sometime during the week, read the Bible daily, examine your conscience, go to confession at least monthly. Build fraternity with other Catholic men. I thought it right away, Rambo is only for the movies. You can't fight this battle on your own. That only happens in the movies. This has got to be, he says, with other men, other Catholic men, and build fraternity, and that's where groups come in.
That's right. And I love it that I think there were seven ways. He's very concise. He just gives these 7 points. Mm-hmm. He gives these concrete 7 points for people to follow, and I'm sure even if you took the first three and then began working on the next three, once you've mastered the first three, that's an easy way to go about it. Now, about these groups, you've been researching them for a while, and I think a few of them we've written about in the past, but tell us about these men's groups that have kind of moved to the forefront as groups that are showing men who are stepping into the breach.
Oh, yes. Okay. There are a couple I'd like to highlight over here that I did highlight in this article. One was started by a gentleman called Matthew Christoph, and it's called the New Evangelization Project. I'm not mispronouncing that. That's Evangelization Project, because it's aimed at men, obviously, and trying to get men, again, back to step into the breach. There's a companion website called Catholic Man's Night. It's another model with a simple format. Another major group is the Men of St. Joseph. The Men of St. Joseph went from one group to hundreds of groups over here across the country, and they follow the same basic, simple patterns. They gather men together, and they discuss the gospel for the coming week. That's one of the most important things. And then the men, to stand in the breach, are not only supposed to live that gospel, but they're supposed to take it home, open a discussion with their family about the readings, or maybe even on the way to church, if they don't have time, talk with their family about the readings, so the family is prepared. And the men pray together for the families. That's important. And hopefully they bring that home, and that they pray with their families at home also, because the man is John Paul II says the head of the domestic church. And this is so the whole thing they're trying to do is to put their hands put the family in the hands of the Father, as Ryan told me, and therefore in the hands of the Father with a capital F, God the Father. And therefore, emulate the true man, Jesus Christ, the best model of a manliness that we have, and model themselves after him.
Joe, I think these are really concrete ways for men to step it up a bit, and it seems like such a part of it is to, like you said, the camaraderie, but also the learning of the faith and the practice of the faith that in a visible way. So I want to invite our listeners to go to the article that you've written and to find out more about these particular groups. The article is A Manly Call to Arms, Phoenix Bishop Urges Men to Spiritual Battle. It's you can find the websites and the different groups there. But I wanted to conclude with one thought. In Bishop Olmsted's exhortation, he talks about the responsibility that men and women, but he's talking to men, and he says, you have a responsibility that you made at your children's baptisms, that you were going to bring them up in the faith. And he really pinpoints that as being key in the decisions that these men should be making regarding their faith, that they owe it to their children to step into the breach. And so he really appeals to men's sense of duty, which is an important thing for men. And I just applaud Bishop Olmsted for that, and I applaud you, Joe, for covering this this issue for a long time and for this story that you wrote. And hopefully we'll be talking about this again because
Thank
we'll
you.
See many more groups rise from this discussion.
I hope so. I hope so because there are a few more men's groups out there that we'll need to highlight in the future that follow these lines.
Great, Joe. Well, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome, and thank you, Jeanette, for having me on again.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com, ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen or download the show. Thanks again for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.